in the meantime, been joined by Tony Trischka. Tony, how are you today?
Steve, I'm great.
Well, good.
Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Hold on a second. There we go. Dropped the phone. I'm sorry. It happens sometimes. All right. So, nice of you to join in. I understand you're busy making music, as you always are.
Yeah, I'm in, as I always say, one of the bluegrass capitals of the world, for sure, which is Brooklyn, New York. And I'm in the studio here doing some tweaks to a new tune for my new album.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this the same album we were talking about last October that was nameless at the time?
Yeah, it just keeps stretching out. Rather than going into a studio and recording the whole album in 3 days, I do like three tunes here, two tunes here, one tune there, so it takes longer. But it is the same one. It's now called Great Big World.
Great Big World?
Which was a title that Bela came up with. We were in the middle of the New York banjo tour, and no one was around, and Mickey Stearns and Bela, and everyone was kind of throwing out. I said, I need a name for this album. And I think Noam came up with the meat preacher and his beef creatures.
I'd have gone with that one. I didn't get a vote, but I'd have gone with that one right away.
You want to go with that one? Just forget the Great Big World?
Forget the Great Big World. I like Noam's idea.
What about Five String Teeny? That was another choice.
This is good. This is good. These are all good.
Yeah. All right. The cover photo kind of sends shivers up my spine. That's the only problem. The concept of that.
Well, when are we going to have this thing available to buy and listen to and enjoy?
That's a really good question. I can't give you an exact date. It's really tentatively mastering it on the 15th, but maybe it's probably going to be early in the next year. We'll put it that way. January, February. That's a little bit of a guess, but it should be by then.
Okay, so this won't be on our Christmas list unless we get one of those gift cards.
Well, it'll be the early Christmas gift for next year. Something like that.
All right.
Gift card. There's an idea.
Gift card, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. I wanted to talk to you just to see what you've been doing because it's been since October since I've even chatted with you. So I know you're doing stuff. I knew you were recording this album, and people have heard your interview. By the way, your interview is up on the Unreal Bluegrass website, the old one from October. So we are supplementing. Uh-huh. We are supplementing this today. So all right. So you're recording. You've already done the New York. Is the New York Banjo Summit thing? Is that still alive and still moving around the country?
Yes, we will be doing that in October, up in the Northeast.
Okay.
We're doing 12 dates, and Abigail Washburn will be joining us as well.
Okay, and we're still not in Kentucky, though, correct?
Still not, but that's the thing. It's a movable thing, so that's what we're doing this time, but we can get down south, which I would love to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, anywhere within 100 miles of where I'm sitting, which is, right off of Cincinnati, right south of Cincinnati. I'm not going to do a house concert. I just can't pull that off. So you're going to have to find you're going to have to find a venue that'll sell tickets for you.
You might need a big house, but I don't know. Something like that.
All right. You mentioned right before we came on the air that you're playing a new banjo. You have a new banjo, which I'm shocked at.
Yeah, I was in the Czech Republic. I mean, I still have my Deering. I'm playing that and love it.
Sure.
But I just was in the Czech Republic. I guess I came back about 3 weeks ago. And there's a guy over there named Zdeněk Roh, which I won't try to spell for you, but it's, it is Zdeněk Roh. And anyway, he's one of the three really great Czech banjo makers, Jaroslav Pruka being another one. He's probably a little more well-known than most people. But when I was over there 3 years ago, this gentleman asked if I'd like, Zdeněk asked if I'd be having him make me a banjo, and I said, sure. And so maybe 3 or 4 months ago, he sent me this picture of the coming together, and he actually did it, and it's great. I'm really happy with it.
Cool. All right. Is this special made for you, or is it something that normal pedestrians could buy?
He's helping to break it down into the States, bring it into the States, and it hasn't happened yet, but in the next 4 or 5 months, perhaps. And it's called Roll, R-O-L-L-S, is up at the top of it, but it's got the two extra frets like Noam has or had on his, and because I like the idea of being able to get the higher octave G way up there,
okay.
And I'm enjoying that, and it's got kind of an Art Nouveau inlay pattern by based on a guy named Mucha, who's a great Art Nouveau Czech guy. And my background is Czech, that's why all this is happening.
Sure.
And it's got a quilted maple resonator, which is just gorgeous. And it's gold plated, which I initially, he just made it, and then he said, it's gold plated. I'm like, I'm not into the glitz and glamour that much. But once I saw it, I said, yeah, it's really nice, because it's more of a blondish, it's not completely blonde, but leans towards the blonde rather than the darker thing.
Okay.
So it actually, anyway, I'm loving it.
Okay.
Love the sound. Oh, yeah, and it sounds great. Not incidentally. So I'm really happy with it.
See, listen, I wanted to talk to you, but kind of catch up on what you're doing. And as you know, in a little bit, I'm going to work some magic here, push a button, play a song, and then we're going to pop up again with Sonny Osborne on the phone. And I just wanted to, quick in 30 seconds, Sonny Osborne's contributions to banjo world. Now you got 25 seconds. I'm taking way too long.
Okay, his contribution to the banjo world?
Yeah.
Incalculable. I mean, he could play like Earl and you'd think it's Earl, or he played all this beatnik stuff, all this crazy, wacky, cool, bluesy steel guitar stuff in his backup and his sliding all over the neck. I mean, in the 3 seconds left, I can't even begin to describe it.
All right, I could.
You get the idea. He's amazing.
Yes.
And has contributed a huge, huge amount. He's been a big inspiration to me.
I made up the whole thing about 25 seconds. Here's what I want to ask you, though. It seems to me that the more that you listen to Sonny, and when he's not playing the lead, which is phenomenal and perfect, clear, absolutely wonderful, that's the stuff that kind of, like you're saying, comes out of nowhere.
You're talking about the backup stuff?
Yeah,
his backup is just ridiculous. And, you know, one of the things that I have picked up from him is playing things like bending notes so they're a little out of tune on purpose, you know, so the whole thing gets a little more fur-bearing rather than having everything completely clean and perfectly in tune. I mean, Earl would do this too, but Sonny did it even more in cool, really cool ways. And I could even play it on the banjo if I had another 15 seconds.
You got 15. Go take it. Go ahead. I'll give you that.
Yeah, this isn't going to be hi-fi, and I get good like picks out here too, but... So I can do this a couple of things come to mind immediately. You can tell me if this is carrying or not.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, here we go. Like this lick. This won't be completely in tune, but I just tuned out a double C, but. That roll lick.
Okay.
Instead of a string. Sonny would go.
Okay.
He did that on first string. He would end it. Can you hear that at home?
Yeah, I get the difference. Yes, it gets a little distorted over the phone line, but I picked up what you were saying made sense. It's not like we were sitting in the same room when you did that kind of thing. Yeah.
Rather just hammering on straight. Bend the straight.
There you go.
Sharp. It's not
that.
Yeah. I guess it's high enough fidelity to make it really work. But anyway, that kind of a thing. And he was with other licks. And I said that it's a cool thing. It creates this kind of tension on purpose that really just is wonderful. So anyway, I could go on and on about
it. And you could. And the thing about it, too, is that it kind of came, you know, from Sonny's background. He was sort of like coming from nowhere. I mean, from a little kid from Eastern Kentucky and then up in Ohio, he would just hear sounds and incorporate them in and twist them around and make horns and pedal steels and guitar, all kinds of strange sounds.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And here and there, he would just show me, like, how Earl did a particular lick that I never quite knew how to do, or I was doing it a more difficult way. And he said, here's how you do it. Oh, that's so easy.
Yeah.
Thank you. So he's definitely shown me some stuff. He Shenandoah Valley Breakdown. Bill Keith recorded that for Bill Monroe. And I heard the story that when Bill Keith was recording with Monroe, Monroe wanted them to say, hey, this was like in March of 1963, and Monroe said, let's do a Shenandoah Valley Breakdown, except Monroe couldn't remember how it went. So he called, I just heard the story that he called whoever used to play it with him, and had this banjo player, former banjo player, play it over the phone for him, and then he said, oh yeah, that's right, and then he taught it to Bill Keith, and Bill Keith recorded it on Decca. And Sonny said that it was actually Rudy Lyle, who was the first one that, and he'd heard Rudy Lyle do it back in the, whenever, earliest to mid-50s, And this is, you know, more recently because Sonny's not playing anymore, but he kind of described it and taught it to me the way Rudy Lyle played it, which is really cool. So, you know,
it's
Sonny taught me the correct way to play, the original way to play Shenandoah Breakdown.
It's kind of amazing that he never forgets those little notes that he played 50 years ago. Like 3:15 on a certain day, he played this note.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
Yeah.
And just, you know, all the stories you can tell about playing with Bill Monroe, but you can let him tell those stories.
Well, why don't we, you know what, I know he watches the clock, and I told him we'd call around 4:30, and if I don't patch him in soon, he's going to start calling me, which means I have to start over with everything. So if you wouldn't mind, can I play, I'm going to play a tune of yours, Banjo Land, because you got like a little trick shot in there somewhere in the middle of it from Territory. And then when we come back, I will have. Why don't you want to tell before I play Banjo Land? Can you give people some idea of what the heck it's about?
This is I actually recorded this with Bill Evans playing the second banjo part. It's the turn of the century, meaning like early 1900s, classic banjo style, where they're playing rags marches and like classical music. And this was a tune called Banjo Land.
Okay, it's off of the Territory album.
Off the Territory album.
Okay. All right, well, let's give that a shot. And when we come back, folks, we'll still have Tony on the line for a while, and then we'll patch in the Chief, Sonny Osborne, and we'll just kind of chat for a while. So hold on, Banjo Land from Territory. Hold on. All right, I cut off Banjo Land because in the meantime, I've hooked in Sonny Osborne, and we were having a nice little discussion off the air about New York. Which always comes up, by the way. Sonny, I have to tell you this. When we were talking to Bill Emerson, we broke in as we were playing Welcome to New York, and you had similar comments to that whole song. But anyway, Sonny Osborne on the line. How you doing, Sonny? It's been a while.
Doing well. Doing pretty well. I'm watching Tiger Woods run away with the Firestone or Bridge, whatever, golf tournament. He played 20 years ago, really.
He's got it back.
He's got it back this weekend anyway. He is really playing well.
Oh, he shot like a 60 yesterday. Or 61.
My gosh, he just made a 60-foot putt.
See, this is what live radio is about, by the way. Here we have sports commentary from Sonny Osborne on Tiger Woods playing golf. I mean, you can't get any more better than that.
You just couldn't believe what the shot he just made. It's unreal. Unreal.
Well, unreal.
Wait, I gotta hang up and find the television here. I'll be back in a while.
No,
I gotta watch it.
Man, I swear, that's unreal. That's unreal. Had to be 60 feet and down in the roughs and everything else, and he hit that and it went right in. Unreal. If I was a golfer, I'd be Tiger Woods.
Sonny, before we patched you in, Tony and I were just talking a little bit about some of the stuff you did with banjos and how you kind of opened things up for backup play. And of course, you didn't hear that because you were watching Tiger Woods, and that's cool. I mean, but anyway, that's kind of where we were when I patched you in.
Yeah.
You don't deny any of that, do
you?
I'm
saying, what? Hello?
Sonny, you don't deny any of that, your impact, do you?
Not really, no. And I tell you, I've thought about this a lot because I've been asked about this at least 1,000 times. But it's just all according to what you hear and what you want to hear and what you want to play. If you just settle in on you left me and I'm going to die and all that stuff, if you just settle in on that, that's how you'll play. And but I just never was comfortable doing that. And I listened to every kind of music, every horn player, piano player, steel, electric guitar. I listened to everything that I could listen to, and I learned to play what they played and how they played and why they played such things. And yeah, it did. It opened up a whole new thing. What Earl did was just as simple as a day is long, but it was as good as you can get because it matched what he and Lester were doing. And so Bobby and I thought, I guess in the late 50s sometime, that if we played nothing but bluegrass music, that's what we would be. It would be just another bluegrass band. And so what we did was try to listen to other things and duplicate or use some ideas that other people had. And that's what we did. And it came out to a different style, and I'm thankful that it did, because it served us well for, what, 50 years, I guess, close to it, anyway. But that's all.
Hey, Tony.
And I still yes, sir.
Tony, did you find a TV, or are you still there?
I'm here. I'm here. I was hoping I could get away, but Sonny was saying such great stuff, I had to hang out.
All right.
Oh, yeah. great, all right. Yeah. Well, I never considered myself as being anything other than just another guy trying to make a living playing the banjo, and I never will think of me any different than that. It's just like a carpenter. If he drives nails well, that's good. He drives nails good. But I just played the banjo, and that's what I wanted to be.
Yeah, you just hurdle, you know. You really stretched the boundaries. I mean, again, we were saying before you got on how you could sound exactly like Earl. Whatever that album was you did with Bobby, where one side was the Flattened Sprugs and really straight ahead Monroe stuff, and then the other side was what you guys would do
on
your own. And, you know, I listened to that. Man, exactly like Earl. You just got his sound so close, and then on the other side you were Sonny with all the great stuff you do in addition. It was wonderful.
Well, we played the Opry one night, and Lester came up to Bob, and he said I was driving into the Opry and I heard a record, and I thought it was one of our old records, and it was I'll Never Shed Another Tear, I think, or Little Girl in Tennessee, one of those two. And he said, I thought it was, my goodness, they played one of our old records. And he said, and when they got done with it, it was you guys. He said, that's not fair some way. But what we wanted to do with that, and the reason that we recorded that was we just had Rocky Top, which was a hit song and a really popular song, and we thought that if we can get our idea across to people that, well, let me go back. Rocky Top was listened to and heard by a whole new audience other than bluegrass people. And it was played on radio stations that never would play bluegrass. And the reason, I guess, it was played, they were forced to, because it was a hit song. And so, but then fast forward a little bit then, when we put the album out, it was entitled Yesterday, Today, and the Osmond Brothers. Well, what we thought that we would play some of that old bluegrass music as close to it as we could get, and maybe draw some fans from either side back to what we wanted them to hear. And that was the reason for that album. And they... The record company, Decca, they had to put it out because we were a hit item right then. So it was all a conspiracy and a con game. That's what it amounted to, which is what the business is to begin with. It's nothing but a con game because you're trying to con people in the thinking your way. You know?
Tony's in the studio, and we're talking. Okay, never mind. Go ahead. The business is a con game. That's going to be the quote of the day.
Well, it is. It is. Our record contract with Decca was an absolute con. Doyle Wilburn called Owen Bradley and said, look, I've got this group that RCA is going to sign this season. And RCA was not going to sign us because Chet had already turned us down earlier that day. And he said, RCA's going to sign these people. And he said, you can get them right now if you want them. They're here in my office. And so Owen said, well, I don't think I'm interested. And Doyle said, okay, good. And he called the, I can't remember the guy, the head of DECA in New York. He called that guy and told him the same thing. And when he hung up, he said, Owen will be calling me within 10 minutes. And honest to goodness, we sat there, and it wasn't 3-4 minutes later, the phone rang, and the secretary came in and said, Doyle, Owen Bradley's online, whatever. And Doris looked over and kind of grinned. And when Owen got on the phone, he said, are those guys still over there? And he said, yeah. He said, well, bring them over, we'll sign them. And it was just a complete con is all it was. And so the whole business is just a con, and you conning people into thinking that you're something that you're not. If you understand that, you're a lot better man than I am, because I don't.
I've learned something here today, Sonny. I've really learned something. It's my new business model. Thank you.
You want to change the name of your new album coming out, Tony?
Yeah, I think I got to do that. It's going to be called Sonny Says, I think. Something to that effect.
Buy this record. It's all just a big con anyway.
Well, listen, it is. If you get to thinking about it, it is. Because you're trying to impose your will on somebody, on other people that really don't care one way or the other.
Well, they got to buy it.
And that's just the way it goes. Dark Souls, that's the way it is. Steve, you've been getting letters from people in Hong Kong and Tokyo. Oh my goodness.
Well, there.
I hate to talk and run. I have to split though. Unfortunately.
Why?
Yeah, I got to go.
He's working the con, Sonny. Didn't you understand?
I'm working the con.
We're not important to you. That's what it is, Steve, right there. See, I told you how this would come out. Because, see, we're not important to Tony.
You mean the world to me. Are you kidding?
Tony's already got his point across before I got in here. And as soon as I got in, he said, oh, go down. Nice. He also taught Bill Fletch how to play.
Oh, boy.
Wait, what is that supposed to mean? What do you mean by that, Sonny?
Oh, I don't mean nothing by it. How'd you take it?
Tony, sometimes I step in at this point as an attorney and advise people not to speak anymore.
I see, okay, yeah. Thank you, yeah. Okay. With your other hat on.
Yeah, my other hat.
Steve, that's not fair. That's not fair at all, because that's using what you know against us, what we don't know.
That's part of the con, man. What can I say?
Yeah, that's it. You got it. You got the picture now. Right. Now go forth and multiply.
All right.
Okay. Tony, seriously, Tony, are you doing well?
Yeah, things are really good. I'm finishing up a new album, and I could go down the laundry list, but no, things are really good. Thank you.
All right, that's
and I'm glad. Good. I'm glad to hear you sounding good, Sonny.
Well, I'm doing as well as I can. I have good days, I have bad days, and for 76 years old, I'm not doing too bad, I don't guess.
Uh huh.
You know,
you're sounding good, and that's good to hear. It's really good to hear.
Well, I appreciate that.
Hey, I'm going to, Tony, you got to run. You're buying time in a studio somewhere, or someone is conning you into buying time. I'm not sure how to phrase it anymore.
Yeah.
So, that could be.
Now that I talked to Sonny, I know if it's all a con, I got my antenna out for it.
That's right. Be careful. Be careful.
Thank you, Sonny.
I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to play Sonny. I'm going to call you right back. I'm going to play Who Done It by the Osmond Brothers. We now know that... all who done it were conning other people. But you, I'll call you right back. Tony, thanks a lot, man. Get back to your studio stuff. And Sonny, I'll call you back in 2 seconds.
Great talking to you, Sonny.
All right.
Steve, thanks so much.
All right,
hello,
man.
And goodbye, everybody.
All right, see you, bye. All right, in the middle of that, we did say goodbye to Tony. Tony was recording at the time, part of the con, running the con up there, as Sonny explained, and we still have Sonny here. How you doing again?
Doing really well. Taking the summertime pretty well and enjoying life a lot right now, enjoying a great deal. Things seem to be going well with their family and all that stuff, so everything's doing well.
Okay. Doing good. Good. You moving banjos? You got the Rocky Top out there?
Well, the Rocky Top banjo was out there, and everybody that hears it is raving about it. But for some reason, banjo sales are just almost nothing right now. I mean, just really nothing. And I'm not the only one. There are other people, too. I don't think there's anybody selling banjo, and I think the reason that is everybody's making them now, and I don't know what company it was that made it possible for you to buy all the parts to make a banjo, but I think that's what most people are doing right now.
You think they're making their own?
Yeah, I think the ones that that want to buy banjos or make their own right now. I think that's got a lot to do with it. And there's so many makers out there, people that are making banjos right now, it's unreal. But like I've said before, I don't make a living at it, so I don't really care one way or the other. Mm-hmm. If they sell, they sell. I don't advertise. I never have, never will. And if they sell, they sell. The Rocky Top banjo is out there, and I have designed a new tone ring that has made a great deal of difference in banjo sound, and it is closer to the old sound. Well, for instance, Aaron McDerris, that works with Rhonda Vincent's band, has a Rocky Top banjo, and he has the original Rocky Top banjo, the Flathead 3 that he bought for me. And he keeps it in a safe now at his house, and he uses the Rocky Top Osborne banjo instead. So it's that good. Mm-hmm. And I understand, too, that he has recorded with it. Bill Emerson has recorded with it. Bill Evans has recorded with it. Joe Mullins made a complete album with it, with one of them. And so the banjos are producing, they're really good, and they're good studio banjo too. However, people are just not buying banjos right now, but that's okay.
So you don't think it's necessarily the economy, you just think there's so many people making them or making their own that it's just not, they don't have to buy them.
I really think that's true. Probably, for a $4,000 investment, they're probably investing, I'd say under $1,500 or $2,000 by buying their own stuff. And I don't remember what company that is. E.F. McDonald or somebody, some company is offering the whole shebang. I mean, the neck, everything, all the parts that you need.
There used to be a company, Stuart McDonald, that sold parts.
Stuart McDonald, that's what I say, E.F. McDonald.
Yeah, you're E.F. Hutton. You're confusing your E.F. Huttons and your Stuart McDonalds.
That's right. And that's Stuart McDonald. I believe they are the company that's offering these parts. And who knows who makes the parts? I would say they're probably made in China or some other place, Korea maybe. And those parts probably, at cost would be probably $200, and then they're selling them for I don't know how much, but then a guy has got only, $1,500, $1,400 in a banjo. And for most people, that are not professional players, and they don't insist on that old, master tone sound, that's good enough, you know. And so I appreciate that. I understand. If I were a kid starting out again and was not a professional player of any kind, I'd do the same thing, I guess. So it's not a bad deal. But like I said, it doesn't bother me much. I don't think Steve Huber or probably Jeff Stelling is liking it too much, but, you know, that's just the way it goes.
You don't have a big stock of them. You just kind of make them as the need comes in. And then normally, this is funny, folks. That's how I got mine, but I'd known Sonny before, but, you often, if it's not too far, you like to take a road trip and deliver your banjos in person.
I enjoy making the banjos and seeing them the first time, but to hand it to a guy and let him look at it the first time, that's really good. That's really good. And I do deliver a lot. If it's in Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, or Georgia, some Alabama, I'll get in the truck and drive them down there. So, I mean, that's good. I enjoy doing that a lot.
I can tell.
That tone ring that I was telling you about, Bill Anderson, liked the sound of the Rocky Top banjos so well that he wanted and ordered another tone ring to put in. I don't know if he put it in another Chief that he's got or another banjo that he's got, and he said it really, really improved that banjo a lot. So
I was under the impression, maybe it's from talking to you or maybe talking to Bill, that he put it in a Maple Chief, which would be like mine. Matter of fact, I think his Maple Chief is the one built right after mine was.
Oh, that's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. Maybe that was what he put it in, but then I think he recorded with it, and I got a copy of the thing. Well, I don't think it's out yet, but I got a copy of it, and you're not believing the sound. I mean, it is really good. And I've heard Aaron and Kristen, has one too. And, I've heard them on the radio, they offering people like that, places like that, and this banjo is unbelievable, I think. It's the tone that I want to hear. And it reminds me of those old banjos from the 50s, 40s, 30s. So it's good.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. If someone like Aaron, and I know that he bought an old Gibson from you, did he not?
He bought the Rocky Top banjo.
That's right.
Recorded Rocky Top.
That's right. That's
it's a flathead 35 string.
I guess it makes sense. I guess it makes sense. And it's kind of odd that once you get it together to start making payments or buy one of those, then you put it somewhere and keep it safe, I guess, for investment purposes. But then if you've got a Rocky Top like yours and it plays well, it kind of makes sense not to take the other one out on the road and beat it up.
Yeah. And this, the new Rocky Top banjo looks exactly like the old banjo, the RV3. I mean, it's just, it's exactly, you put them side by side, you can't tell the difference in them. They look the same. They're, mahogany, with a flying eagle, pattern. And they're just a dead ringer for the old Rocky Top banjo.
Hey, on this program, we have a chat room, and every once in a while I look down, not very often when I'm talking to someone on the phone, but, there's an old acquaintance of yours named Mark Cirkening. Mark,
the high doctor?
Yes, sir. He's in there right now. And oh, matter of fact,
goodness, I've known Mark since 67, 66, maybe 67, 68.
Well, he listens. Sure. He listens to this show on Saturdays. He's actually usually at work.
Great.
Yeah, and he wants to know this: Would you bring one up to Syracuse?
I think about that.
Maybe you and Mark could find a midway point between here. There's lots of them. Trust me, there's lots of places between you and Syracuse where you could call it a midway point and call it a day.
Oh yeah. I don't know what kind of banjo Mark has.
Well, if he's listening, he'll tell me. He says he hasn't played one in 25 years. I'm just reading what he says. Would you deliver one to someone that hasn't played one in 25 years in Syracuse? I'm thinking.
That'd be the holdup right there. Somebody that hasn't played one in 25 years, they wouldn't know the difference anyway. especially Mark. Mark is really a really nice guy and a great eye doctor. He really is.
Yeah. I met him for the first time at Gray Fox a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I'd known him from different, you know, contacts and different lists and whatnot, and actually met him and just enjoyed meeting him. He has wonderful things to say about you and Tony, and I didn't see, before Tony left, I didn't see that he wanted me to say hi to Tony, because I just wasn't looking down at the screen, but now he's telling me Sukerning. I put the R in the wrong place, Sukerning. All right.
Well, he's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy, yeah. How'd that go with Gray Fox, by the way?
It was hot, man. It was hot. It was hot, heat upon hot, but it was a great show. And I'll tell you this, once we got all the technical stuff figured out, the broadcast was fine. I did about 10 hours Friday and 10 hours Saturday. And I think I texted you when the Earls of Leicester came out. I got out of my seat and went around and just let the thing run by itself to watch the Earls of Leicester. Man, Jerry Douglas, if you're listening, it's Jerry Douglas and Charlie Cushman and Johnny Warren, and I think a guy's name is Sean Camp that did the Leicester part, and I don't remember the other people, but they come out and say we're going to do Flat and Shrugs note for note, and I'm telling you, Charlie busted out on the banjo, and that was a fine surprise. I hadn't heard them.
Yeah. What's the name of the band?
They call them the Earls of Leicester, and I don't know what the Leicester part means, to be honest. I'm sure it's significant.
Well, let's take up on Leicester.
That could be. Well, that could be. But man,
the Earl of Leicester. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they came out and nailed it. Man, I'll tell you, it was just, you know, everybody was note for note. Nobody was taking a ride, and they were, and from the very first note, Charlie kicked it off with, I don't remember the first thing he played, but it was like, holy moly. I left my chair and went out in front and sat there and just let the program run by itself, hoping it didn't shut down.
Now, Sean Camp played the fiddle with us before Brandon Belson came to work with us.
Oh, okay.
And he's not a very good fiddle player.
Well, he was playing the guitar and doing the Leicester, trying to sing like Leicester is what his role in this band was.
Yeah, and he can do that. And he, when he left us, he started writing songs. And now he is probably a multimillionaire by now because of his writing. Because he's written songs for Brooks and Dunn, and on and on and on. I mean big time stuff.
Oh.
Sean's a very, very good songwriter.
Well, it was, I mean, there were so many great bands, I don't mean to exclude anyone, but that was the one that just made me bolt out of my chair. I thought that was by far the most pleasant surprise. I just didn't know what they were going to do. I kind of knew from Charlie what it was about, but I had no idea that it was going to be that solid. It was just I hope they get to record something.
Did you see the Traveling Mercuries?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
Well, I liked them traveling with who did they travel with before this? I forget. I saw them once before. The guitar player was a different sort of guy for their normal sound. I thought it was a little. I liked it before. They're traveling now with a guy. I can't Keller Williams, who's fine, but I just didn't think fit in what they were doing, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Ronnie or Rob. They were just in and out. I know it's a different thing for them, definitely a different sound.
I don't understand the thing they're doing. And I don't know why they're doing it.
Yeah. It was more, I tell you, they blended in more to what Keller does, and he travels more he's mostly a solo performer, and he'll travel more with the Yonder Mountain string band type of crowd. And I felt like they kind of blended into what he was doing. And I didn't hear much of, you know, I have an album. I have a couple of things they did together without Dell, and that just sort of blended into what Keller was doing, and I felt like it lost what I wanted to hear from Rob and Ronnie.
Well, that's the whole point. You want to see, I mean, Ronnie's as good a mandolin player as you can get, and Rob is an excellent player.
Yeah.
And but they're doing this stuff that just, I don't know. Anyway, that's all. Here or there.
Wasn't my favorite this time around, but I definitely, the Earls of Leicester blew me away, so you have to talk to Charlie about that. And
get I will. All I right, definitely man. Will.
Hey, listen.
See what's happening. We're over time.
We're over time. All right, we get extra pay for this. You'll get a bonus check in the mail.
All right. I need it, too.
yeah, sure. Hey, Sonny. Thanks, man.
Take care of yourself,
I will talk to you soon. I'll come down and see you sometime soon.
All Okay. Yeah, you come to camp?
Yes, sir.
All right.
All right.
That's good, man.
All right. I'll see you, man.
You know, Bill Keith's going to be with us this year for 3 days.
Well, you mentioned Bill, and at Gray Fox, I was camped right next to Bill and was with him most of the time. He came up to my booth a lot and helped rearrange my wires, which I thought was awfully nice of him.
Yeah, he knows that stuff. He's good.
Oh, yeah. Great guy. Awesome. Yeah. All right, man.
Take care, sir.
All right.
See you later.
All right. That was absolutely typical Sonny conversation. And if you ask him a question, he's going to answer it. So Tony was really rushed. I appreciate that, Tony, that you had time to pop in for a minute. And he was back in the recording studio doing the con game, I guess, according to Sonny. That was fun. I dropped a button at one point and had to come back up and reconnect some things. But I enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it. Still working on some sound issues. Eventually, I'll have the phone calls run through this mixer and have a little better control of them. But thanks, Tony Trischka. Can't wait for the new album. And always thanks, Sonny. And I'll come down here and see you sometime soon.